This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Wow, are we going somewhere that is going to make today's episode super exciting. We are going to the future.
Yes, we are. It is an out-of-this-world episode. So what problem are we solving today?
How do you talk to a spaceship?
How do you talk to a spacecraft? I have a feeling that this is going to be a very, very exciting answer. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Today's guest is Rob Chambers, and he is the Director of Business Development and Human Spaceflight Developer for Lockheed Martin.
Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hello, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks, you guys.
We are so thrilled to have you because, of course, what we're going to be talking about is Callisto, which is on the Orion spacecraft. So, you know, we are so excited because Jeff and I are, you know, are going to the Artemis launch, unless it's already launched by the time you hear this. But I want to start at the very beginning. Have you always loved space? Even as a kid, did you know you wanted to do this?
I have always loved space. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with space. When I was a kid, I remember the magazine sitting around with the Apollo astronauts on it and a lot of excitement about what was going on. And then all I knew was like, space is cool. And so then fast forward, like, I don't know, 18 years, and I got into college and I said, all right, I want to build the spaceships and I want to build the ones that the humans fly in.
Okay. And that's already hugely narrowed down from all of the things that you could do in space.
Exactly.
From astronomer, planetary science. That is a huge narrowing down. What made you decide to pick the building the spacecraft that humans get into?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking back to when I was a little kid, and the thing that excited me the most was the idea of human eyes and human brains processing on behalf of everybody what they see and what they touch and what they feel. Wow. And that connection just appealed to me. And I'm like, I want to make that happen. And, you know, I was born after we landed on the moon the first time. And I say I've been a little bitter about that I missed it. So I want to get... I'm the youngest of seven kids. And I'm like, the other six got to see. And so I said, look, I want to get humans back on the moon. And then I want to get humans to Mars. That's what I want to do in the career that I've got.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. So tell us kind of what you do at Lockheed Martin and what Lockheed Martin has done for space so far.
Oh, you know, it's an awesome place to work. I work with some of the smartest women and men I have ever met in my whole life. The group that I'm in actually does a whole bunch of different types of science and commercial activities associated with space. So I've got a group that does the robotic mission. For those of you that want to get out and do some Google searching, Juno is around Jupiter, and it has discovered that the poles of Jupiter don't look anything like we thought they did. There's these cyclones that move around the poles. Absolutely amazing. We built OSIRIS-REx, which went up to and grabbed a sample from the asteroid Bennu. And it's going to be coming back next summer with that sample.
Wow. So exciting.
Oh my gosh. And we've done every mission to Mars. My colleagues here at Lockheed Martin have worked on, starting with Viking back in 1976. Those folks are retired at this point. But, but we've been part of all these missions to the planet. So that's the robotics folks. And then we've got weather and climate. We build all the weather satellites at Lockheed. And then commercial communications, we built over, I think, 600 commercial communication satellites. The area that I spend the most of my time in, though, is human spaceflight. So we started building Orion over 10 years ago. I was on the initial team. I was there when we started.
And, oh, that's so cool.
You know, for those that have never gotten selected, it's like winning a huge contest at school. You're sitting there in the room, you're waiting for them to say, who's going to build this spacecraft, right? And they announced it's Lockheed Martin. And literally, there was probably 50 people in the room with me. And we were all literally jumping up and down and screaming and shouting and hugging. And and then we stopped and we're like, oh my gosh, now we got to go build
this. Now we have to do it.
Oh, wait, they just awarded us a lot of work to do.
Exactly. That was the last time we celebrated. No. It's every single day you go into work, it's a blast. So I got to work on guidance and navigation and control for the first several years. Wow. I led that whole team along with some partners at NASA. And that figures out, like, where is the spacecraft? Where was it going?
Right.
How do we get there? Closed loop control and manual piloting. And then after that, I worked on all of flight software. So we've got over 2 million lines of code on the spacecraft. So, and it's all C++ before anybody asks. It's not basic. It's C++, which at the time was pretty cutting edge, right? Now you're all like, why aren't you using Python?
Right. Sure. Okay. So since you were there right at the beginning of Orion, and the program that we're going to get to talking about is on the Orion spacecraft, I would like to ask, how did you and your colleagues decide how big the Orion spacecraft is going to be? I have seen a mock-up of it at Space Center Houston, and you know there's four seats inside with some quality floating around room. How did you decide on four, not three like Apollo, or not six or seven like an SUV?
Right.
Yeah. Actually, the simplest answer, because you'll get different answers from everyone you ask.
Okay.
The one that makes the most sense to me, that my answer, which is the right answer, is when you think about explorers, you need two people. That's actually why Apollo was the way it was, right? So the crew module commander, the capsule commander stayed, if you recall, up on orbit. And then the two folks came down in the landers.
Right.
So when you go exploring, you want a backup, you need a buddy, right? You know, never go by yourself.
Yes.
Good words to live by. Well, those are words to live by at the moon as well. And so the concept is we have four people on the spacecraft. We fly out to the Gateway and dock with Gateway. Gateway, if you have not heard of it, is the, think of it as a really lightweight, small, perfectly sized, small orbiting station around the moon. That's sort of the base camp, if you will. So two people will stay there, monitor the systems, and the other two people will climb into the lander and land on the moon. And Orion stays up there in orbit. So if you think about it, 2 + 2, that's 4. And so we wanted to always have two people working together.
I like that explanation.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so this time Orion, like for example, Gateway is not built yet. So can you tell us a little bit what Orion is supposed to do on the first trip on Artemis?
That's right. This is actually our fourth test flight, but it's the biggest one yet. You know, when you go into space, the thing I love about, I love everything about human spaceflight in space, but one of the things I love is that you have to think through all the things that can go wrong. That's the hardest part. And you can only do that with teammates and helpers that help you think of what haven't you thought of, right?
Right.
So the first two tests we did of Orion were abort tests. So if something goes wrong with the rocket, you need to get away and get the crew safely back. So we had a couple of abort tests, one back in 2014 that was off of, kind of like being off of the pad if you have a problem before launch.
And
you have to do this turn and get all the way out over the water before the parachutes come out. So that's pretty cool. I was a guidance and control guy at the time, so I just found that to be really fascinating. And then the second test was having that when we're moving through the speed of sound. So we're going like 1,000 feet per second, Mach 1. I don't know, 30, 40, 50,000 feet above. And now you have to get away from a potential exploding rocket. So we rode a missile up to that transonic speed, we call it, and then tested out the system. The third flight test was in 2014, and that's where we tested the capsule. So you can go out and see some awesome pictures of the Earth from high altitude. And there we test in all of the entry systems, all the nominal stuff.
Wow.
So now this test is our fourth and last uncrewed flight test before we send humans out past the moon,
right,
Artemis 2. So this Artemis 1 flight is the last test of all of the systems before we're ready to throw humans further out than we ever have in the history of humanity.
Wow.
And we said, you know what? We said, nobody's on board, but we've got these systems we want to test. And this spacecraft is so complex. We need some way of testing it. And that's where Callisto was born, actually.
Well, and we have the technology these days to do that. You know, like we didn't have that back in the 60s or even maybe barely 20 years ago. And now Callisto, like, how many people, like, I'm curious, all of you out there, how many of you have Alexas in your house? I don't happen to, but my son and his wife have two in their house. I don't know.
They talk to
each other. Like, I don't know how that works.
Yeah. In the middle of the night, man, they're just jabbering away. We have four in our house. Everything is connected. I actually had problems with our router and I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized I had 64 Alexa enabled Wi-Fi devices, light bulbs, fans.
That's a little bit overloading. Yes, I would imagine.
Okay. So since we've named it, can you tell us a little bit about what is Callisto?
Mm-hmm.
So Callisto is an awesome technology demonstration that we here at Lockheed Martin are doing with our partners, Amazon, who is bringing Alexa to bear for us,
right,
and Cisco, who's using their meetings capability, WebEx and Whiteboard. The objective kind of had two different objectives, and I'll give you a little bit of thoughts on how did we even come up with this. So,
right,
you know, like we've been talking about, I worked on flight software for many, many years. We have over 200,000 pieces of data about the spacecraft.
Wow.
200,000. Wow. Because when you send humans out, like past the moon, past, you know, wherever you've been in all of history, the spacecraft is really, really complex and you need all of this data to make sure it's working successfully.
Right.
But that's a lot of data to process as someone,
sure,
on board, right? That's why we have our team, like back on Earth, right? The mission control,
right,
center.
Exactly. Yeah.
But we said, how can we make the folks on board interact with the spacecraft, talk to the spacecraft in a way that makes it more natural, right? That turns all this raw data into information. We have a saying that says we're drowning in data, but starving for information. Right?
I love that.
So we said, man, you know, one of the best ways we interact naturally as human beings is with voice. And
yes,
one of the best communication paths between us is voice combined with video, right? So we said,
nice,
let's just explore. Let's call Amazon. I expected just to be laughed off of the phone, but we called Amazon. And
first of all, they answered, right? Like maybe they wouldn't even have answered unless you would have said, hey, we're Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they must have seen the Lockheed Martin phone call, you know, the caller ID pop up. I got to tell you, I'll tell you a little story later about trying to dial out of Amazon headquarters. That was fun because it's all voice activated with Alexa. There's no dial, like there's no keypad. I'm like, how am I supposed to dial back home? They're like,
oh my gosh,
I'll be programmed into Alexa. Yeah, it was really wild. Anyway, so but this is long before I was trapped in a conference room at Amazon trying to dial out. We called Amazon. We said, hey, what do you guys think about throwing Alexa on the other side of the moon? And I literally expected like, I don't know, but they just said, fantastic idea. And
wow,
this is sort of their story to tell. But if you go back and you can kind of see this, if you do a little bit of web searching, you'll see that one of the original Amazon founders' concepts for Alexa was this Starship Enterprise computer from Star Trek. This concept this entity that sort of fades in the background when you don't need her. And
right,
when you do need her, then she comes forward, right, and answers your questions. So I didn't know that at the time. So it turns out when we suggested this, they were like, full circle, fantastic.
They're like, yes, this is what we made Alexa for. That's awesome.
Right. Totally awesome. So I work in all these future concepts. So sometimes, and I live in the future, there was a time I thought my credit card was expired at home. And my wife's like, what are you stressed out? I go, well, look, it expires at the end of 21. She goes, it's only 2020. And I'm like, oh, I thought it was 2022. So I live in the future. I think it's 2024 right now. So sometimes things, you know, I think they're going to be simpler than they turn out to be. So I thought we would just slap an Echo Dot like on the cabin console, and away we would go. We started talking about how Alexa really works. And so we could tie into that in a little bit if you guys want to chat about the challenges, right? Because it turns out it was a hard job, and we'll talk about all the smart people that made it possible. But after we talked to Amazon, we said, okay, that's part of it, but how do we interact with the spacecraft? Particularly because there's nobody on board this time other than Alexa. So we called Cisco and we said, this was before COVID. So video conferencing and working from home, teleworking wasn't quite a thing. And we said, what do you guys think about teleworking from the moon? And they're like, love it. Oh my gosh. Perfect opportunity to test some of our low latency or long latency stuff. And then of course we found out how important that was for all of us, right? Now that we've learned how to work. So Cisco was on board right away and we talked about the different tech. So we sat down. You want to hear a little bit about like the challenges we had?
Sure. I think that would be, that would be really interesting because that's kind of what we talk about here, because engineering and science, it's not just like, hey, we want to do this and oh, look, it worked. No, that's not how it works.
I don't know how many of you out there have run into this, but you think something's going to be easy. And as soon as you get into it, you realize there's things you didn't even know. And you can either grapple with it yourself, which sometimes is fun, right? Solve your own problem.
Right.
But eventually you got to know when to pick up the phone and, you know, maybe ask mom and dad for help. But what's really fun is calling your friend and say, all right, I don't know what to do here. And then you just create. So after we talked to Amazon and they said, flying Alexa would be awesome. I said, okay, good. We're just going to slap an Echo on the dashboard and away we go. And they're like, well, here's the deal. There's no intranet at the moon. And I said, And they said, Alexa works with the internet. So if you, I wouldn't advise this, but if you were to take apart your Alexa device at home under the full support of your parents, what you'll find is it's a very simple device. It's able to recognize the word Alexa. By the way, that is the wake word. It's called the wake word. That is what we're using on Orion. So when we dial in from mission control, we'll say, Alexa, you know, how fast is Orion going or whatever. But that's what an Echo or a Dot or any of those systems, they detect that wake word. And then it takes what you say after that. It sends that up to the internet, up to the cloud. And there are, you know, servers and machines and processes out there that then figure out what it is you said with like incredibly high accuracy. And then it sends that message back with information if you asked for that, or it goes and sends out the command to turn on your light if you've registered your bulb with Alexa and so forth. Well, so there's no internet out at the moon. And so we said, gosh, if on the ground, I ask Alexa something, Alexa then would have to send all that information back to Earth. And, you know, the speed of light, it's fast.
Right.
But the real issue is all the switching through White Sands and Tedris and all of these different kind of connections.
Yes.
Space, right? Super secure, right? So we're like, gosh, that's going to take a long time. It comes all the way back. Then we send it up to the cloud. Then we get the information. It goes all the way back to Orion. And then Alexa responds or changes the lights in Orion or whatever Alexa's going to do. And then we get that information back with all of our video cameras. And I'm like, that's a really long time. And that's not how it's going to operate. We don't want it to operate that. Because what if you don't have connectivity with the Earth? Like, if I'm an astronaut thinking about the future,
right,
and I've got Alexa on board helping me, if I lose communications with the Earth, that's probably when I'm going to say, Alexa, what's going on? And you don't want you don't want Alexa to say, I'm having trouble connecting to the internet. Please wait. Right?
That would probably be very bad. Yes.
That'd be wrong. So Amazon explained, you know, we're looking at this same technology here on Earth in cars. When you don't have cell service or local Wi-Fi, you still want to be able to use Alexa to control your radio or on your phone to change stations, change the heating, you know, whatever it is, right? So they said, we have this concept of local voice control. And they also call it hybrid control, where it's able to do some stuff local.
Okay.
And she said, well, how about local all the way on the other side of the moon? So that's really what cemented it for all of the nerds and the geeks. And I use that because that's what I aspire to be, a nerd and a geek. That's what got everybody excited at Lockheed Martin, at Cisco, and at Amazon, was to figure out how to instantiate Alexa in a device. So like It is in the spacecraft. Alexa is there fully instantiated. So that was the part that I had no idea it was going to be that hard.
That is very cool. And it's neat to hear the behind the scenes of, you know, when I wish all of our listeners could have seen Rob's face when he was describing, yeah, I picked up the phone and we called Amazon and they said, yes. And Rob just looked so excited. This is Lockheed this is Lockheed Martin talking to Amazon.
Yeah.
The biggest, most awesome companies on the planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of listeners might just magically think that, oh, because it's those two companies and they have all the money in the world, that things just magically work out. And turns out it wasn't anything like that.
It was not. Oh, my gosh. So much. At the end of the day, big companies, whether they're Cisco or Amazon or Lockheed Martin or any of our colleagues in aerospace and tech, at the end of the day, it's individuals that make the difference. And it's solving math equations or being clever about how to brainstorm with the other folks and how to not give up. And I've learned more about acoustics than I ever I would, you know, as we talk to Amazon, these guys are fantastic. And they said, okay, let's talk about the inside of Orion, which holds four people. It's made out of metal and it is not, it is not your living room, right? Like no carpeting, no drapes, everything. And those guys were like, oh my, this is so much fun. And we're like, okay, but we got to launch really soon. So you only get to test a little.
Exactly.
So what types of information will Callisto be able to give the astronauts?
Right. There's kind of like three different, we call them use cases. You could call them scenarios
or
concepts, if you will, that the software nerds call them use cases. So there's kind of three use cases. The first one is over from, so one last thing just to remind all of us and the listeners, the third part of our partnership is Cisco. They allow us the connectivity to back to the control center. So if you think about it, Alexa's on board and we want to test out Alexa's connectivity to Orion, but we also want to test out how the crew can interface on board the spacecraft to Alexa. Well, since there's no crew on board, we had to create what we call a virtual crew member down in mission control. And this is like the mission control you see on the videos. They gave us a special back room that looks just like the front room. It's like totally wicked. Huge comm screens. You guys will see pictures of all that during the mission. So Cisco gives us a chance to like pretend we're on the spacecraft. And then we talk to Alexa. We get interfaces. We video conference and we'll talk about that. So the first use case is via this WebEx from the Mission Control Center. We're going to talk to Alexa and ask Alexa, how fast is Orion going? Where is Orion located? How long until the next burn? So we've talked about these 200,000 telemetry points on the Orion spacecraft. Alexa has access to all of that.
Wow.
And so when you ask Alexa a question, you'll get the answer of, you know, how fast is Orion going? There's over 1,000 what Amazon calls utterances that we've added that are custom because, you know, there's not too many main engine firings in your living room. So
I mean, come on, that'd be fun.
Main engine cutoff on the sofa.
Miko and time for dinner. After Artemis 1, we'll all be able to control main engines in our living room. But going in, we have not.
Right.
So we had to add about 1,000 utterances, which itself is amazing. Like they train, you know, you don't program. Okay, here is here is the digital representation of the audio because all of our voices are different, right? So they train the system for all sorts of different ways of talking to it. You know, when we're in some of the rooms, we're there with like the top developer for Amazon for the world or for the solar system because, you know, it's no longer just the Earth. And they're like, okay, I mean, it's like really, it was actually really humbling. And I'm like, you know, we just came up with this idea. Now we have the top people in the industry sitting here like figuring out how we're going to make this work. I get so excited. I'm sorry. This is like such cool stuff. So
no, it's cool for us too.
Totally nerding out here for everybody. So the first use case is asking Alexa, what is the temperature of the spacecraft or where is it located or how long until the next burn or Miko, right? The second use case is, of course, to change something in the spacecraft. And if you're not using Alexa to change the color of the lights in your spacecraft, you're just not even hitting the minimum bar. So
you're not trying.
I want purple today.
Epic fail. So, yep. So that's exactly it. So we have these hockey pucks, we call them, with three color LEDs, and we can combine them in any combo. So we have seven colors. I always say eight because black is a color. That would be off.
Yes.
And we can select the color based on what's going on in the mission. So we'll say, Alexa, turn cockpit orange because we're about to do a burn. And so the crew cabin is going to turn orange. And
nice.
We've got all these cameras set up so we can see out the windows and we can see the iconic blue ring. Like, we have that on Alexa.
Yes.
On the spacecraft.
Sure.
We even have a virtual reality camera. So later you can put your headset on and playback what it was like in the cockpit when mission control is talking to Alexa right before we do a main engine.
Cool.
That will be awesome.
Immersive. Yeah. So that's the second one, is asking Alexa to do something to the spacecraft. And then the third real interaction is interacting via that video conference capability.
Right.
Because we're testing out sort of the virtual ability to be in the cockpit, but also we want to test out, what does that video conference look like from the Mission Control Center in Houston all the way out to the moon? Because that's where the astronauts are going to be. You know, we've been using stuff like this on the International Space Station for a long time.
Right.
But for the nerds out there, you may know that we have super high bandwidth. That means lots of ones and zeros every second.
Right.
From the space station. We have what's called Ku band, which is a very high bandwidth connection.
Mm-hmm.
When we go all the way out to the moon, we're, in our case, we're on S band, and that just means a lot less bandwidth. So the cool thing there, we sat down with Cisco and we said, okay, it's time to video conference, not from our living room, but from the other side of Tranquility Base. And I said, that's not much bandwidth, relatively speaking, to what we're used to here on Earth. And gosh, not a whole lot of, you know, there's a lot of latency, right? You know, that multiple seconds. So how do you actually get that human interaction? How do you figure out and start working those human factors, and how do you do the video compression so that, you know, we don't freeze?
Which happens a lot. Yes.
I think you're stopped. I think you're going, oh, can you still hear me? So we wanted to work through all of those with real constraints where we have control over like all aspects of it. Right. So the Cisco guys were completely nerded out about next generation video compression and decompression, machine learning for, you know, how to recognize shapes early. And it was really awesome.
So that is very cool.
It's very cool. So, I mean, you're talking about being able to talk all the way around the moon. So I know, like, when they've gone to the moon in the past, that there was kind of a blackout period. So will you be able to talk and communicate during that blackout period when you're on the far side of the moon?
Yeah. So if you remember from movies, all of the movies about Apollo, Apollo 13 is a great one, right? Where you can see how big the moon is, and they, you know, everyone's on pins and needles until you get AOS, acquisition of signal. The mission that, and by the way, if you ask Alexa at home, Alexa will tell you about it. The mission that we're doing, just saying, the mission actually goes out around 60 or 70,000 kilometers past the moon.
Yes.
So that's further than Apollo ever did. If you look at Apollo, it was, what, I don't know, a couple hundred nautical miles. I'm mixing units. We have to do that because we have to think in all of our different folks. You know, the front end of Orion is English units, and the back end is metric, because the back end comes from Europe and the front end is built here in the U.S. So, fun fact for you. So for those of you are so mad when your teachers give you criticism because you forgot the units on your science homework, units are really, really important. I'll just tell you that.
Yes.
So anyway, so for Apollo, they were really close to the moon. And so exactly, Jennifer, the moon obscured. We're going to be so far out there that both the moon and the Earth are going to look little in the windows. And we've got some imagery we've worked up to figure out, like, how big are they going to be, and make sure we get those cool shots. So most of the time, we're going to be so far past the moon that we'll be able to see the Earth really easily.
Oh, which means that you can communicate with it more easily.
Can communicate, line of sight. Now, someday, soon, we'll have relays, communication relays around the moon. So So it doesn't matter where you'll be, you'll always be able to talk to the Earth. But at the moment, we don't have those. So we have to be able to see the Earth to be able to talk to it. And we will for most of the mission.
Exactly. Okay. So I do have one quick question. You said we could ask Alexa. Can you ask Alexa now? Like, what's going on in the Orion? How does that work?
Yeah. So if you say, Alexa, take me to the moon. If, don't say, Alexa, fly me to the moon, because you'll get the Frank Sinatra song. So don't let your parents do this. You guys have to do it. Because anybody over the age of, I don't know, 30 is like, hey, fly me to the moon. No. That's the wrong song. Alexa, take me to the moon. And Alexa will start to talk to you about going into space. She'll give you pointers of where to go for more information. She'll talk about the launch date that's coming up. And during the mission, we'll be pushing information from the onboard Alexa out to the internet here on the ground. For those science fiction nerds, you know, think of the Alexa onboard the spacecraft as sort of the clone that's out there. And then the Alexas on Earth will be told by the clone what's going on. So every day, we're going to upload the information here on Earth. And so your home devices will know where's Orion and, you know, what's going on, when's the next burn, those types of things. But you can do that today and start getting information and even set up a reminder for the launch. So you remember to wake up because it's at 12:30 in the morning the next launch attempt.
Yes.
Which may already have happened by the time people hear this.
It may have happened by the time that this comes out or not, but hopefully so. Yes.
This is super cool. Before Jennifer gets to that challenge, I know she's starting to itch that way, but I want to ask, will Callisto be on future Orion spacecraft? Is that already decided, or is this a test to see whether or not it definitely will go?
This is a test, just like the test you take at school. It's one thing to say you can do something and to do the stuff at home and in your garage, but you actually have to go out and fly it. So I talk about it as we have to eat our vegetables on Artemis 1 before we can have the main course and convince NASA to let us add this onto Artemis 2. Fingers crossed that the answer will be yes, Jeff, but we gotta eat our vegetables first.
I love my vegetables.
Yes. I love vegetables when they're this, not so much that, you know, peas, but I think this is just such amazing technology. And I mean, I was in the first class that had computers issued to us at the Naval Academy. And that was 30 some years ago. And now I just look and I'm like, my gosh, we can talk.
And now Rob is describing the computer from Star Trek.
We can talk going to on computers. A I mean, it's just amazing what humans can do and engineers and scientists can figure out when they work together. It's just mind boggling.
Yep.
I'm so excited to see how this works.
So important. Yeah. I can't be more proud of the teams. I would walk into these meetings with Lockheed Martin and Cisco and Amazon engineers and technicians, and I couldn't figure out, you know, which woman or which man worked for which company, because they were all just arms deep in schematics and software and use cases and solutioning, right? It was one of the coolest projects I've ever been part of.
Very cool. Very cool. So you actually, something just clicked in my brain where you said you live in the future. If this goes well, you eat all your vegetables and Callisto does exactly what you want it to, and NASA puts it on future Orions, are you also targeting the Lunar Gateway to get Callisto as
Absolutely.
Well? Very cool.
So we'd love to fly it on space station and give it a good working out.
Right.
Certainly, all of us are working on human landers, so we expect at least the ones that Lockheed Martin gets to work on, we plan to fly Callisto. And on the rover, we're working with, that's another big teaming opportunity, partners, right, working together with, in this case, General Motors. So we want to put Callisto on that as well, because at the end of the day, like space, everything in space wants to kill you.
that's true.
Brutal environment. You know, no air. It's really cold or it's really hot. You know, you got to get home. The dust on the surface is like t- toxic and, and you know, like little razor blades. And so the more help you can get from your friends and the more you can bring from home, the better. So we would love to see Callisto just flying everywhere. That's a plan.
Oh, that would be fantastic, I think. Yes. So we have reached the time of the show where we ask everyone or our expert to give us a challenge. So I'm curious to see, what is your challenge for our listeners, Rob?
The challenge that I have for you is to go to Alexa and remember to say, Alexa, take me to the moon, and then participate throughout the mission. So one of the things that I forgot to mention, actually, is you can get your message to pop up on Callisto during the mission. And we'll have video recordings and all that. Now, remember, this is all a test, right? So sometimes tests don't work out exactly right.
Sure.
Don't be mad at me. But you can go out to LockheedMartin.com/Callisto, and that's a great, that's where we're going to put all the imagery, of that virtual reality stuff, all the video recordings of everyone testing the payload. But you can also go out there or on the app, which is called, I got to double check what it's called. It's the Orion app. And you can go either one, and you can put in a message that you want to have appear on the screen. We actually have a tablet on the spacecraft.
Okay.
So that's how you video conference. And it'll pop up your little message and we'll video that. Don't know if the moon will be in the background. It may just look like a big dark sky because we're really far out there. And the moon, like the moon's not always in the window, right? It's really small.
Right.
So, but it'll be cool. And maybe it'll be orange or blue or purple or green in the cockpit, depending on what we're doing. And your little message will pop up. So we would love to get your thoughts and wishes and, you know, what do you envision for the future? So go out there. That's the challenge. Go get involved and get your message onto Orion for Artemis.
I love that.
That sounds great. I think Jeff will have to send something from Solvent for Kids.
Absolutely. Definitely. We will try to see if we can get a screenshot of it.
There you go.
You know, we'll have to test out the VR screen later to see if we can see our message pop up in the VR.
We'll hook you up. We'll make sure we find that image and hook you
that
up.
That would be fabulous.
This is being able to see the message on a screen. This is taking the send your name to the moon or send your name to
a little
Mars
bit farther.
This is a quantum leap from just, oh, hey, I know my name is somewhere in the computer code.
Which I did that, by the way.
Oh, me too. I've done all of them. But to be able to see the message.
Cool. Next level up. Yep.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
You guys are doing great work.
Yep.
Keep living in the future.
Yes.
Let your wife let you know when things will actually cancel and things like that. It's great to have partners like that. This is so exciting.
This is very exciting. I'm so glad that I ran into the Lockheed Martin team when we were down there for the first Artemis launch attempt. We hope everybody does your challenge because being a part of Callisto is being a part of history. Remember that, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Rob. We really enjoyed having you on Solvent for Kids.
Thank you, Rob.
Total blast. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Wow, some of our guests are just absolutely fascinating. When I said at the intro that we were going into the future, we really are going into the future. I think all of us have said, hey Alexa, here on Earth, but the fact that astronauts are going to be able to do the same thing with their spacecraft and be able to talk to both the spacecraft and mission control to learn information, it's mind-blowing, Jen.
It really is. And it's so amazing. I mean, I keep saying this a lot, but humans, we're pretty stinking cool, right?
Yes.
I mean, we can come up with all of these amazing, amazing engineering and technology kind of things. But what I think is really cool is, particularly with Artemis 1, is the mission control on the ground is going to be able to ask Orion, how are you doing?
Yes.
Tell us what's going on. So that's even more cool. And then, of course, the astronauts also get to use it when astronauts get sent around the moon. But wow.
Yes.
And also, we get to participate in this challenge. You and I both have to get Alexas now, Jeff, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't have one now, but I definitely want to say, Alexa, take me to the moon to find out what happens and to hear the information that's going to be there.
And we can also send up messages to the Callisto while it's on Orion and just see a message on a screen in a spacecraft from the cameras that are in there, and to know that they're changing the lighting for what's happening with the spacecraft. Exactly. Talk about ways that are getting kids, and you and I are grown-ups, excited about what's coming for the future of human spaceflight. This is absolutely right up that alley.
Right. And the cool thing is, think your message will fly on Orion, which is going the furthest distance that humans have ever gone, you know, from in a capsule that will carry humans around the moon. I mean, so your message is going like really, really, really far. So all of you should try this while Alexa is in space, while Orion is flying. So make sure you try this challenge. And if you do, share it with us. We'd love to hear about it on our social media. Tag us. We are at KidsSol at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to check out our website, Solve It for Kids, for this episode, because we will have all of the instructions for how to talk to Alexa and also to learn more about the WebEx part of how this is going to work and everything like that. So check out solveitforkids.com for this episode.
Listeners, don't forget, Alexa, take me to the moon. Until next time, this is Jen and Jeff for
Solve It for Kids.